Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we explore the skills and competencies needed to face the new realities of work.
Welcome to our Skills of the Future podcast, and our theme for this series is HR Game Changers, Skills and Competencies Needed to Face the Reality of Work in this time of change. What is that new reality? My name is Christine Lamotte, President of Perennial Talent, a competency-based talent management solutions company. And our guest today is Andre Jones. He is the Director of HR and Talent Development for J.J. Haynes, one of the largest floor-covering distributors in the United States. In his role, Andre is responsible for all people programs, policies, practices related to talent planning and acquisition, talent management and development, employee retention, and engagement for Haynes staff. Prior to joining Haynes, Andre directed strategic employee engagement and learning solutions for Blessing White, a division of GP Strategies. Now, Andre has the ability to integrate coaching, consulting, training, along with his applied knowledge of business management. And he's been able to help organizations improve business productivity, leadership, culture, client satisfaction, employee retention, and employee engagement. We're so happy to have you on our podcast, Andre.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Christine.
It's a pleasure to have you as our guest. So tell me, how are you managing in this time of change? Incredible time we're living.
Incredible time it is indeed. This year has been full of change personally, professionally, and organizationally. And I'm pretty certain that I'm experiencing nothing short of what everyone else is experiencing, but just maybe a little different in terms of not only the tolerance for this current pandemic, perhaps even with the infiltration of the rampant social injustice and political, I would call it madness, that has really erupted this year as an election year. So it's been quite challenging, but there's also been some bright spots to be happy about that's encouraging for the future.
It is, eh? We always have to have hope, don't we, in looking at the future. That's what keeps us going. So, yes, a lot of hopeful things are happening right now. And like anything else, we will be able to see the end of this, hopefully sooner than later. So talking about change, Andre, how has the world of work changed? Like, what's been the impact of having more employees working remotely?
Oh, wow. So that has been quite the experience. Remote work, I think, has changed the game in terms of how this organization views its talent, views its pathway to business success, and most importantly, views its philosophy around culture. Leaders in this organization now more than ever had to really reflect upon whether or not they brought their game to the table regarding communication. Leaders needed to polish up their ability to kind of lead virtually. And most importantly, it challenged a lot of our leaders, top level and front level, first level, it challenged their ability to explore non-traditional ways to keep their teams engaged while working in a remote environment.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of our guests have said that it's so important to keep that communication going from leaders to so employees know what's going, also looking at it from an aspect of caring, like that, you know, when you're not physically there, nobody's forgotten you, you know, you're still part of the team and part of that, you know, family.
Exactly.
Of workers. Exactly. So that's great. So thinking of the talent life cycle, like hiring, learning and development, onboarding, career pathing, et cetera, what is the biggest need or greatest change that you've seen? Are there any areas or roles where this is especially salient?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. You know, one of the greatest challenges I think we've experienced was in talent acquisition. You know, within that environment, there was a need to adapt to more of a video-based interviewing protocol. Mm-hmm. As you'll know, as just like any other company, you know, it was more about moving beyond this, I have to see it to believe it, you know, perspective, you know, mm-hmm. The nostalgia behind having someone visit your facility and you're able to engage in this interpersonal aesthetics with having that person right there needed to be kind of revamped. But most importantly, it just needed to be dissolved because there was no way you wanted to jeopardize yourself, your organization, or the individual with coming outside of their home environment into a pandemic-filled world. So therefore, our talent acquisition team pretty much focused on their ability to understand job duties beyond the job posting, strengthen engagement with hiring managers to better understand, you know, what to look for in a candidate's resume and how to match up what they see in a resume with practical tactics that happen on the job and then improve that screening process using video to be able to provide safe space and comfort for a candidate just to be themselves. So that way you can get the gist using video of how those candidates communicated, their ability to articulate clearly, mm-hmm. their thinking, their ability to strategically solve a problem, and their experience with strategically solving problem, and most importantly, collaborating with individuals in a virtual context, not just in an in-person context. So that's one example. I would say another example mm-hmm. Is learning and development. This was quite interesting because obviously, during this pandemic, working remotely is one aspect of it. I know our personal challenge here in our organization was that we had a split force. Individuals worked remotely. Individuals worked, I would call it staggered shifts. And also one population, which is a third of our population, they could not work from home because as a distribution organization, you have warehouse and those employees had no choice but to show up. So therefore, L&D role was pretty interesting because when you think about the work that's typically done in L&D, you would agree that most L&D practitioners would say, I love to have the audience front and center in the room so I can engage and I can speak to. Well, guess what? Not in a pandemic where people are working from home and you're socially distant. And your room sizes have been limited to smaller capacities. Mm-hmm. So the challenge there really was thinking about how can you re-engineer self-paced learning? How can you structure virtual workshops to strengthen engagement? And then also, how can you connect with a broader remote audience at their convenience by using podcasts or micro-learning, short video bursts? Mm-hmm. The challenge there with us was really, how do you gain the attention of learners? And the philosophy was to really take these learning sessions and brand them and advertise them just as you would in a marketing environment. Because in a virtual environment, you would imagine your attention span is everywhere. Not only are you focused on your work, your business, you may have kids in the background. You may have a spouse in the background who's not quite used to you being at home. You might have the dog who's used to nobody being around, but yet now wants several walks per day. Yeah. And then last but not least, you might even have the weather because this summer just brought about some gorgeous weather. So branded and advertised it so that way individuals knew that the course was something attractive. And then last but not least, the challenge of creating shorter, meaningful, and relevant learning experiences became the topic of choice, because you have an abundance of things that you're prioritizing and multitasking around. So to be able to connect with our workforce, professional workforce, I would say, get them exactly what they needed. So that way, when they needed it, they know exactly where it is, they can draw upon a skill, and they can use it. That is what we kind of sought to in order to strengthen what L&D was doing to support the organization. And the very last thing I'll tell you, as it relates to the talent life cycle, really around the topic of career pathing, was the fact that, you know, I recognized early on that, you know, my role in HR was going to take on an entirely different lens, especially through the lens of talent management, talent management and career pathing. I felt that the spotlight was so bright on diversity, equity, and inclusion, not only inside of the organization, but outside of the organization. I mean, social injustice was just screaming at everyone in this world. So therefore, the challenge of how to channel that energy in a way that would really show employees that, yeah, we do value you, your interest, and how you navigate your career in this organization became the topic, and it became ultimately the choice. So what was game-changing is pretty simple. You know, it was really about making sure that I challenged the assumptions of our senior leaders within the organization to think about bias that sets in performance appraisals. To think about how to place a brighter spotlight on individual contributions that are made by our talent, and whether or not, question whether or not, when they look around the room, is our talent fully represented at all levels across the organization? And are we truly reflective of what our customers wanted to see when we're out in the field? So that was really the emphasis on career pathing, because anyone could argue that, hey, I like to be the next director, I like to be the next vice president. But in an environment where, you know, our organization is at the leadership level predominantly white males, it's easy for a likes-like phenomenon to set in, and they're hand-picking individuals who not only look like them, but have similar characteristics, professional characteristics as them. So therefore, that really became the rally cry in career pathing, just as also with talent acquisition, finding folks who may not necessarily be what you want, but what's best for the organization, what's best for our teams, and what's best for our customers.
Exactly. It's that is quite a challenge. You're talking about culture change, and you know, that's competencies is our field. And what we love about competencies is that it helps remove a lot of the biases that are in place, and often they're unconscious biases. Yes. But it's really about how someone can perform and do the job, and removing those biases that could really, you know, get in the way of finding the right fit, you know, for a given job. And then, like you said, it's not just about diversity, it's about inclusion. Once you hire people of that are of diverse areas, be it social, cultural, racial, it's listening, bringing their opinions, you know, to the table, and, you know, reflecting a lot of that in processes or policies, procedures. It's who are we listening to, you know, and making all our decisions. So that's quite a task, quite a task. Yeah. But congratulations on, you know, making that, you know, a goal within your organization. Because, you know, when you try to change, not everyone is open to that kind of change. So good for you, Andre.
You're quite right.
What skills or competencies do you feel are most important right now, you know, for organization? And what challenges do organizations face when it comes to developing the right skills and competencies, you know, required?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think right now what I'm seeing and with a number of other colleagues across other organizations that I'm talking to as well, you know, one of the biggest competencies that I think organizations and leaders of organizations are challenged with right now, and it's very important, is mastering the understanding of employee engagement. You know, employee engagement in a lot of organizations pretty much is a mood indicator. You know, what's the current mood of the organization? But that data, if structured correctly and if delved into meaningfully, it can be a part of a larger listening strategy that's really providing the organization with the impulses of employees through the lens of talent acquisition, through the lens of talent retention, and then most importantly, through the lens of culture. So I think that's one competency that I think is really understanding employee engagement. Another one I think is pretty important is, which is new, I think, to the professional world in a lot of ways, is social and emotional wellness. Mm-hmm. I think to provide training and support for leaders to begin to pay attention to how they communicate with employees, the resources they provide to employees, but most importantly, addressing the needs of the individual. And sometimes that means addressing personal situations as well. That's also now, I think, an emerging competency that's being talked about on some levels, but probably not loud enough. Mm-hmm. The pandemic has really showed us that when managing a remote environment, a remote workforce, I should say, individuals really, you find, were not comfortable with the virtual aspect, because a number of professionals have spent a number of years in an office having one-on-one personal engagement or interactions with individuals in person. And listen, it's also a generational challenge as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm finding a wide spectrum of mix between millennials. We talked about this for years. You know, millennials, you know, wanted the casual and flexible work environment. Well, even now you're hearing millennials say, yeah, I do miss going to the office. Yeah, I do miss the snacks that were provided in the office for free. So therefore, how do you identify when you have an employee who doesn't have that family support system, who may be living in a city or state without supportive resources and find themselves at home alone, and they're on your team? How do you combat depression in an employee that, you know, who's otherwise becoming disengaged with the work, not because they're not capable, but because they don't have the social elements that was around them to really keep them fully engaged? Mm-hmm. Managers now have to step up and have different types of conversations with employees that, yes, are business related, performance related, career related, engagement related, but also personally related. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've implemented here at Hanes was the resurrection of the one-on-one conversation. The one-on-one conversation with employees in past used to be all about performance. And our sales team would, you know, have one-on-one engagements with account executives. They talk about sales reports, but we've re-engineered it to focus on the employee. So our one-on-one conversations pretty much, excuse me, are focused on two questions. What's most important to you as the employee? And what can I do as the leader to help you right now in this moment? Mm-hmm. And we ask employees to reflect and think about those two questions. What's most important to you? And what can I do as the leader to help you in this moment? And it really forced leaders to strengthen their skill set of attunement, external attunement, because mm-hmm. sometimes a leader is so engulfed in their work and processes and procedures and leading to business results that they forget that there's a person on the other end that needs to accomplish that. So paying attention to whether or not they have a trust-based relationship, paying attention to whether or not they do create safe spaces for employees to speak their mind and opinion without retaliation or retribution. Those are all a part of making sure that those social and emotional elements in a virtual environment are successful. And last but not least, I would say making sure that the organization is making the investment mm-hmm. in resources so that way leaders and supporting elements within the organization can truly sponsor and support all of the activities that are going on. And that doesn't mean going out and purchasing the best new and shiny platform to communicate with employees. Sometimes it means just making sure that the resources we currently have are being adequately utilized or applying simple add-ons to help make it more effective. So those are some of the things, Christine, that I think from a competency level are so important right now. And it'll help, I think, organizations kind of key in on skills that should be developed at the leader level because employees want it. If you provide them, I think, with the right platform and approach, I think employees will communicate. But I think in most organizations at the leader employee level, especially in a virtual environment, communication is only as strong as the leader's ability to create the environment and the routine and the cadence for communication. And that's what these competencies would do.
Absolutely. I so agree with you. And those are two great questions, you know, to ask. And, you know, to be able to define the behaviors, you know, for those competencies. So people, leaders understand what that means, because it's not something that, like, empathy is something that is hard to train, but you can help guide leaders to become more empathetic by asking those questions and going through the movements like that, because employees need that. They need to know that they care. I mean, we're all human beings, and especially in these times where you might be alone in isolation, and there are emotional needs that are really important, and leaders need to step up. I so agree. So that's great to be able to recognize those competencies and to be able to help them develop that, because it's not easy to develop those kinds of competencies.
Right.
Especially now, as you were saying, some of the challenges, you know, training remotely. But you're right. To be successful, because some, you know, I've looked at some of the trends, especially with women who are dropping out of the workplace.
Yeah.
Because they need to care. They need to care for their children, their parents, and they're often the primary caregivers. And it's become overwhelming to be able to work from home with all of the conditions you were mentioning previously, you know. Spouses there, dogs, parents that might need you, aging parents. So when an employer can really understand the situation and those questions, what's most important for you right now and what can I do, you know?
Yeah.
Then people will be able to communicate that and maybe retain, you know, talking about employee engagement, retention's really important as well. You don't want to lose those employees. So, you know, what are the future threats or pain points if organizations don't take the time to clearly define the skills needed, you know, for success? Like, what could go wrong, you know, if these threats or pain points are not addressed, Andre?
This is pretty simple, I think, in today's environment. Number one, your organization is going to be less attractive to work for. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be a fight for talent. You know, obviously unemployment numbers here in the States are severely high. However, if you break those down, you'll probably see where in certain industries, unemployment rates are probably higher than most. So therefore, in most professional organizations, I think that if an organization doesn't step back and clearly focus in on the employee experience and really understand how the employee experience connects to the customer experience and create a culture that's inclusive of elements that, you know, help create belonging, mm-hmm. And help individuals identify that you value a balance in life and work, you're going to be less attractive to work for. So that's number one. Number two, internally, you're going to lose your top talent, hands down.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, people now realize that they have a choice. Your choice is pretty simple. Do I want to work for an organization that's antiquated in regards to its policies and processes, mm-hmm. And culture, or do I want to go work for an organization that's progressive or somewhat modern in regards to their viewpoint of culture and how work is done? And listen, sometimes that conversation doesn't teeter upon whether or not the wages are competitive and benefits packages. Mm-hmm. You know, that used to be the mantra in HR. We got great benefits. Well, forget benefits for a second. This is about perks. Perks and purpose will win sometimes and outlast compensation or run neck and neck with it. So you're going to lose your talent if you don't pay attention to these things. The third one I would say is from a business perspective, you know, one of the biggest changes that I know I had to make this year was strengthen my business acumen in HR. I can talk to you about HR and talent, key metrics and performance indicators, but I really needed to look at those very same numbers through the perspective of business results. Mm-hmm. So therefore, if organizations don't address these issues, you're going to find yourself losing competitive advantages. You're going to find yourself lacking in innovation. Mm-hmm. And then last but not least, it goes without saying, but you're going to look at your margins. You're going to look at your revenue. And most importantly, you're going to see a clear connection between declines in revenue and margin and your client experience. Mm-hmm. I think that, and I've seen where clients now, your customers are paying attention to your employee experience. This is one of the most interesting studies here. Mm-hmm. Clients are paying attention to how you treat your employees, because there are a number of clients that organizations may be servicing that's actually looking for best practices. And the very first place they look at is the suppliers, the people that they do business with. Mm-hmm. So therefore, if your employee experience is terrible, then your clients will begin to take notice. And as they see the people that they work with in your organization revolve and not evolve, mm-hmm. they'll begin to question whether or not you are upholding your end of the bargain and providing them the best value, which is the last thing that I would say as well. Your customer experience and your employee experience, hands down, really shape your brand image. I know that, you know, you can go to Glassdoor and take a look at the employee experience. But every so often, if you go to a company's website, for some companies that have it, if you check out their brag board, mm-hmm. you know, you can pay attention to over time the brands that they service today versus the brands that they service yesterday. Now, there are a number of reasons why client engagements begin and end. However, sometimes when you think about your customer experience and the current environment that you're creating for your customers to really feel and think and connect to your business value and your mission and purpose, you'll begin to quickly understand the link between your employee experience and your customer experience. And if organizations don't look at that along with trying to save their way to profitability and operate lean and, you know, I make sure that they retain top talent, I think they'll miss the mark in avoiding some of these pain points.
And you've answered my last question, you know, with respect to actions that companies absolutely need to take today to mitigate, you know, these threats.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's simple for me. You know, I think that, and I know because I've done these as well, first and foremost, take a comprehensive look at the employee experience. Identify who's being left out of the experience. You know, your better service, your better actions take place when you first start focusing on your internal workings. And again, I said this earlier, there's a number of organizations that look externally for the shiny bells and whistles, you know, and some organizations look at organizations that are much larger and well-funded than they are. And sometimes those practices just don't fit the mold of what they do and who they are as an organization and what their culture is all about. You know, perfect example, why take a look at an organization that's 10,000 plus employees and their best practices when it may not fit your organization, which may only be 500 to 1,000 employees, right? So difference in terms of scale of practices, but there are definitely things that you can learn. The other thing that I would say that a company might do to mitigate some of these threats would be to develop a listening strategy. I think a comprehensive listening strategy would provide an organization data to better understand the story and the mood of their company. Therefore, a listening strategy could involve establishment of committees. They can conduct some level of organizational analysis. I talked about an employee engagement survey, exit interviews with employees, serving individuals, new hires within the first 90 days or thereafter. Another thing that they can do to incorporate into the listening strategy is engage in conversations with employees to better understand their unique challenges. And that can be executive roundtables, leadership roundtables, in a virtual environment. Yes, that can be done. Go beyond, you know, the proverbial open door policy, or in a virtual environment, you can email me or Skype me or Slack me anytime, you know, go beyond that and spend some meaningful time trying to understand those challenges. And also run parallel with that, coach your leaders on how to coach and mentor individuals. Those are two distinct different competencies there. So therefore, to be able to help managers or leaders understand their role as a coach and the proper time to deploy a coaching relationship with an employee, I think that would help strengthen their ability to make those connections. And the last thing, Christine, that I would say is take action. Take action. Organizations now have to be very, very critical of moving beyond the talk of wanting change, the talk of improving culture, the talk of the difficulties in managing in a virtual environment, and actually do something about it. And that could be conducting, again, micro-learning training sessions that helps on a number of topics. But here's where rubber meets the road. Measure effectiveness of what you do. Measure the effectiveness. Monitor whether or not people are implementing the skills that they're learning. And last but not least, increase accountability. You know, one best practice behind these one-on-one conversations I talked about was simply asking managers to keep track of a tickler. We have a platform here where managers can go in and they can actually document when they've had one-on-one conversations. That documentation turns into data, and that data will tell us of the number of employees that you're responsible for. How many one-on-one conversations have you had with those employees? Now, yeah, there's an argument that can be made. Well, people are going to begin to check the box. Mm-hmm. Well, if they do check the box, you now can pivot your accountability protocol to the quality and the substance of the conversations that you're having. Mm-hmm. But without that data, you don't have a clue of what's happening in your culture. And that's why that data is so important. And it helps to not only emphasize the action that you're taking, but it helps you measure the effectiveness of the actions that are being taken out in the organization. Mm-hmm.
Those are great suggestions. And you're right, in the end, employees are your best investment as a company. And taking the time to do the right thing is so important. And the time is now. It really is because of what's at risk. So I want to thank you for being our guest, Andre, and for your great insights into the new realities of work. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Anytime.